Thanks, Jeremy. So it's wonderful to be here at this meeting, and thanks to John and Jeremy for inviting me to speak. I'm going to use this talk as a kind of the actual material as a kind of matrix to tell you, or hopefully illustrate something about how I think Stu works. So you can make up your own mind at the end. One of the things you'll notice here is that there are a lot of people on this slide. So I think that's one observation you can make. Stu works with a lot of people and draws on the good things out of everyone he collaborates with, and it's from all around the world. I was speaking with him, in fact, at lunchtime about a problem interacting past directed walk problem that we have a common interest in at lunchtime, and it did bring up one, reminded me of something that when I'm talking to Stu, he always keeps on asking me questions to draw out what I actually mean, and many of the conversations we have, two words appear a lot: yes, but, ... that's from Stu's end, and hopefully ending up where we both go away and agree on something. So the observations which you may make is that mathematics does matter in chemistry and physics, that it really does tell you something. I'm not sure all physicists and chemists believe that. That when Stu works on a problem, he works on the whole problem and tackles it with all the tools at his disposal, not just one particular kind of tool. And he keeps at it and over some period of time. And there's an interplay between those techniques. So this work that while the title is about some recent work that we've done together, I'll give you a little bit of a history of this problem. So let's just see if we can go to the next. Right, so this is this problem that Richard was discussing the other day about having a simple model of the steric stabilization of colloidal particles in a dispersion using a polymer to the entropic repulsion that a polymer provides to keep the colloidal particles apart. And this was a directed walk model. Here it is on this slide that he introduced. And of course there was there's the other physical property of synthetized flocculation, which is what you don't want when the polymer starts absorbing to both both colloidal particles. So this series of papers that I want to tell you about started in 2005. The collaboration sort of on this problem has been a few years old now, where we started by looking at this directed walk model. So it was a model in two dimensions and one which we thought we could solve exactly. So what does an exact model tell us? Okay, so it's a directed path of width W. You have two Boltzmann weights A and B associated with the two lines which represent our walls. And here I've drawn a loop, one that starts and ends on the surface. We can also look at, you don't have to have the last endpoint ending on the surface. So you have a Dick path here, but one restricted in height. Let me just remind you that if you consider, and I think this is something I want you to think about, that if you consider the half plane, so you take the top wall off to infinity, you take W very large, then this is this problem of polymer absorption in the half plane. You can use generating functions, as has been described previously. You look at the closest singularity to the origin of the generating variable, and that gives you the free energy, and you have a phase transition as you vary A, because B's not there anymore. from a desorbed region for A less than 2, which is the critical value, where the free energy is constant, and the macroscopic density of contacts with the surface is in fact 0, to an absorbed phase for A greater than 2. This phase transition is a second order phase transition with a crossover exponent phi equals a half. Now what's important here is that this exponent phi equals a half is believed to be a half for self-avoiding walks, those that are undirected, both in 2 and 3 dimensions. So this problem of polymer absorption is in some sense has some kind of super universality perhaps to it. And so you may expect more than usual to get important information out of a directed model. And that of course has maybe something physically to do with the fact that when polymer is absorbed at the surface, it's directed in a way. It's directed along the surface. My thing's not working at the moment. Oh well. Okay. Yeah. Just what? Doesn't matter. Okay, so we can solve, what we did in that paper was to solve for the generating function in the strip. So this is the generating function we calculated, that G of W, W being the width, Z, A, and B, and you get a slightly more complicated problem to solve. You have actually an infinite hierarchy of coupled functional equations to solve, which you can actually solve them. And it leads you to this lovely solution down here, where G of W is written in terms of this variable Q, and Q is written like that. So, as you know, you have to find the singularities of this generating function to find the free energy, and the singularities are given by this equation here, which, if any of you have done anything on exactly solved lattice model for the six vertex model, this is kind of reminiscent of a beta equation. But anyway, you can analyze this, analyze it for finite W and in fact in the large W limit, which is interesting, and it leads to the following phase diagram. Well, phase diagram in the large W limit, and this is why I wanted you to think about the large W limit before. This is the half-plane phase diagram where we took W off to infinity in first. Okay, nothing depends on B. You just have a desorbed phase and absorbed phase as you change A. This is the phase diagram you get from this analysis of this generating function I just showed you on the previous transparency. This is what we call the infinite slit. And you actually have a different phase diagram. So what's happening here? It's that you're thinking of two different mathematical limits. That's why I said at the beginning of the talk that mathematics matters. And this should be physically realizable. This is a polymer near a plane being absorbed or desorbed, macroscopic polymer, with nothing else nearby. This is a macroscopic polymer in a macroscopic size slit. Okay, but the polymer can feel both walls still. And if it can, then it can either desorb to the bottom surface or desorb to the top surface. Those two phase transitions are both second order. But there's also another phase transition between the absorbing and the top surface and a polymer that absorbs to the bottom, and that's actually first order. Okay, so you have very different phase diagrams. So the order of the limits does really matter. I did say that this was a toy model of steric stabilization and sensitized population, and there you actually want to think about the force that the polymer exerts from its entropy and energy that it has, and therefore you want to calculate the derivative of the free energy with respect to the width. And you can do that. We can do this exactly for this problem, and you can find long range and short range repulsive and short range attractive forces, and in fact the line of zero force, which is not one of the phase boundaries. And the force diagram, it looks like this for this directed model. There is an area of long-range repulsion and short-range attraction and repulsion, and there's a line of zero force. So if this is all for the directed model, and you might say, well, okay, that's great. Well, the real model we'd like to have a look at is self-avoiding walks rather than directed walks. And now let's step up in dimension to dimension three, to think of a slab. I haven't got the software to draw three-dimensional pictures, but you can imagine this is actually three dimensions here. So there's my silver lining walk, and it's in a slab. But again, we have the Boltzmann weights A and B. And we began by looking at some numerical techniques on this problem. That's the sort of maybe natural thing to do. And using Monte Carlo and series analysis to have a look at this phase diagram, to see if we could see the same phase diagram. And you can. The shape of the phase diagram is very similar to that of the two-dimensional walk problem. And that appeared after, at the end of the year, now with extra people being involved, Bucks and Enzo. That's a picture of the fluctuations in this model, and you can see where the colour represents the size of the fluctuations. There's a very strong, very large fluctuation along this line, and that's the line A equals B, representing this, we believe, first order transition, and this is the absorption and desorption to the top and bottom surface lines. So this doesn't, of course, occur at 2, it occurs at a different value of A and B, but still this general shape of the phase diagram is the same. So what does Stu go and do? He goes and uses the toolkit that he knows very well, and now tackles the problem with Bucks and Enzo to have a look what he can think say about this problem rigorously. So this is, I get now the problem of self-warning walks in the slab, and he uses those concatenation arguments and came up with a new pattern theorem for walks in slabs, which leads to the existence of the free energy and some monotonic properties of the free energy, other things such as the equality of the half-plane and slip free energies in certain parts of the phase diagram, and bounds on the location of the zero force curve. So more than just free energies, because this is where we're really interested in the force. So can we say anything about the zero force curve? And Bucks and Enzo and Stu did in this paper. And it points again to the structure of the phase diagram and the force diagram, similar to that of the directed walks in two dimensions. So what I want to end up on today is to talk about briefly the further Monte Carlo and series analysis work, where we went back to those techniques to have a look at finer questions about the self-avoiding walks in a slab. And that's just sent the proofs back off to JPSA, so it should appear very, very soon. In addition, we had a look at proposed and confirmed numerically scaling theory, which should hold for if you put the right exponents in, because some of the exponents are different between self-avoiding walks and directed walks in two dimensions, should hold for both problems. There was an original, some basic scaling results associated with the Dowd, but this expands on that. And this is from series analysis. In red here we have error bars, which tell us something about the location of the zero force curve. And as you can see, the green there is the phase diagram, and there's some bounds in blue here, lying where we think it does, and looking like the two-dimensional case. Here's the scaling theory, I won't dwell on it, where you can write the force, for example, which is a function of N and W, parameters A and B, as a function of a variable which is a ratio of one size, n to the new, sort of the size of the polymer, divided by the width of the slab that it's in. With various restrictions on how F behaves at large and small values of its variable. Now I can show you that we did some computer simulations at various points, various lines in this phase diagram, and we looked at particular points A, B, and C. The reason we did that is that the we have these scaling functions, and we believe that the scaling function should be have one universal value inside the desorbed region, and a different be a different function on this upper curve and a different function on this bottom curve. And we might see something interesting. Remember we had in the directed walk case areas of repulsion and attraction. Well, if you look at these scaling functions, the order of this transition here to check that it was first order. And indeed, if you do that, you see that there the peak height of the fluctuations depends on n squared, which tells you it's a first order phase transition. You can verify that by looking at the distribution of contacts with one of the surfaces, and you see it's truly bimodal, so it's true first order phase transition. And here is a plot of our scaling function against the appropriate variable. This is what the scaling function turns out to be. This is for the free energy rather than for the force. And the fact that this cuts off here is just because we've only went to a certain length in our self-avoiding walks, but it fits along some universal curve. Here is probably the interesting case. It's at that point B where the interaction with the top surface is actually stronger than the one at the bottom surface. And in fact here, because the free energy is non-monotonic, you see that there are regions where the polymer is actually attracting and then repulsing the two walls, depending on how close the two walls are. So it's not monotonic; it isn't just attractive or repulsive within that same parameter point, depending on in this sort of mesoscopic area. It attracts or repulses. There are arguments for why that is, but I'm not going to talk about it at the moment. And there's a third one at a point C. So there's some results. I hope the results themselves are interesting, but you can see that over a period of time Stu has published four different papers using different techniques, and there was an interplay between numerical results, exact solutions, and rigorous proof of theorems, which says a lot about the way I think Stu works, and I'm very lucky to be to work with him on those things, and I'm very lucky that he keeps saying yes, but, and so thank you, Stu, for keeping me honest, and happy birthday. So, well, if you've got the force, the interaction on the top surface is much stronger than the one on the bottom surface. So if you have a finite length polymer, obviously it's when it depends on whether the polymer's in